Boston. We'd better put your show on the air as soon as we can, Otero told Jordan, before Halleck figures out a way to stop us. Still seated before Otero's desk, Jordan asked, Can she actually cut off the electrical power from the satellites? With a grim smile, Otero said, She'd have to declare a state of emergency first. That would take some time, perhaps a few days. And the whole region would go into a blackout? She's not going to do that. The repercussions would ruin her. I wonder, Jordan mused. The way to prevent it, Otero said, is to get you on the air before she can act. I'm ready whenever you are. Drumming his fingers on his desktop, Otero muttered, I wanted a big publicity build-up for your show, but we don't have the time for that now. I'll tell my programming chief to put your show on as a special, cancel our regular primetime programming for tomorrow evening. Jordan watched as Otero considered the pros and cons of the idea. At last he nodded once, firmly, his mind made up. To his phone, Otero commanded, Get me McKinley! His mustachioed face breaking into an almost boyish grin, Otero said, Damn the torpedoes! Full steam ahead! It was already night in Barcelona. Anita Halleck stood by the floor-to-ceiling windows of her office and watched the lights of the city twinkling in the darkness. Why does Kel have to be so stubborn? She asked herself for the 100th time. Why is he doing this to me? And the answer came to her as it had the other 99 times. Kel wants my job. He wants to be chairman of the World Council. He spent his life as a diplomat, and then he went off to New Earth. Everybody in the world recognized his name, his face. The popular vote would be a landslide for him, and the council would have no choice but to appoint him chairman. And where does that leave me? Out in the cold after so many years of hard work and faithful service. I deserve to head the World Council. I earned the job. I've led them through the second greenhouse floods, rebuilt whole cities, established a global economic order, moved millions of refugees to safety, saw to it that they were fed, that they found decent homes and incomes for themselves, schools for their children. And now this ex-diplomat, this star traveler, is going to snatch my position away from me? Never. It's a plot, a damned plot by the aliens. They get Kel to take over the World Council, and then they start taking over our world. All this talk about a death wave and saving other planets is a ruse, a sham to hide their real motivation. They want to take over Earth, and Jordan Kel is their Judas goat. Gilda Nordquist, the phone announced. Halleck snapped her attention back to the present, to this moment here in her office, where she held the power to move people. Send her in. Nordquist strode into the office, tall and broad-shouldered. She's built like an Olympic swimmer, Halleck thought, although Olympic athletes don't wear skin-tight mid-thigh dresses of glittering metallic fabric. Gesturing to the chairs in front of her desk, Halleck said, There's a problem with Mrs. Kel. Nordquist's open, clear-eyed face looked serious. Not troubled as far as Halleck could see, but she was concerned about something. She refuses to work with Frankenheimer anymore unless we let her get back together with her husband. Frankenheimer? Halleck asked. The scientist who's been working with her on the alien's communication system. She's been cooperating with him, even putting him in contact with the alien engineers on New Earth. But all of a sudden she says she won't do any more until she's reunited with Kel. The little bitch. Frankenheimer wants to continue with the work, Nordquist continued, calm and unemotional. He's drooling over the prospect of constructing an FTL communicator for himself. For the World Council, Halleck corrected. Yes, of course. But he can't do anything unless Mrs. Kel cooperates with him. And she won't cooperate unless we let her reunite with Kel. Nordquist nodded. Meanwhile, Kel's planning to do a broadcast on the Otero network. He'll bring out every maniac and fanatic in the world. Nordquist said nothing. Halleck murmured, I've been talking with the Americans on the Council. They all have this silly allegiance to what they call freedom of the press, an outmoded term. But it's like a sacred commandment to them. For a long moment, neither woman spoke a word. Halleck was searching in her mind for a way to stop Kel's broadcast and get his alien wife working again with the scientists. Nordquist merely sat, watching the stream of emotions flowing across the chairwoman's face. At last, Nordquist said, I may have a way to solve the problem. You do? Move Mrs. Kell to an orbital facility where she'll be totally dependent on us. Bring Kell to the facility so they can be reunited. Don't let either one of them leave the facility. Halleck shook her head. He'd see through that. He'd refuse to go. Not if you tell him that the two of them can leave the facility and return to Earth whenever they wish. Do you think he'd be foolish enough to believe that? Apparently he loves his wife and wants to be with her. We can at least dangle that carrot before his eyes. And if he goes for it, the two of them stay in the orbital facility incommunicado for as long as we choose. Halleck thought it over for another few moments. Then, it's worth a try. Good. Let's do it. Get Frankenheimer to move his laboratory to orbit. And there's one more thing you have to do, if you please. Looking surprised, Halleck asked, what? Promote me to head of the security section and get rid of the incompetent oaf who's in charge now. With a laugh, Halleck said, done. Before Nordquist could react, though, she added, once you get Kell and his alien wife into orbit,